Welcome to the Silver Screen Podcast. I'm Jared Boomer.
And I'm Katie Gainey. This is a podcast about movies and pop culture.
And today on episode number 69 of the show, continuing our Great Directors series with a review of arguably one of the best movies ever made, would pop up on many people's top 10 lists, and that is The Godfather from 1972. So, of course, directed by Francis Ford Coppola. So excited to talk about this one.
This is one of my favorite movies. I didn't put it in my top 10, but I did realize when I was watching it this time around, I've probably seen this movie at least 10 times.
Very nice. So yeah. I've seen it 3 or 4 times, I believe. So I will say I liked it more on this viewing than previous ones. So I don't know if that's just because I'm older and I understand it a little bit better, or if I really tried to pay attention to it this time more than I have in the past, maybe because we were reviewing it for the show. So I think it helped me appreciate it more. So we'll talk about that in just a little bit, our review of The Godfather here on the Silver Screen Podcast. And first up for news, don't have a lot of news today, just a few things. DC released a lot of stuff over the weekend with their like little Comic-Con got canceled. So they weren't able to do their like typical announcements at Comic-Con that DC and Marvel and all those big comic book studios do because that got canceled due to COVID. So they all did kind of like online events. So DC had theirs over the weekend and they released a teaser trailer for The Batman with Robert Pattinson.
Yes.
And then a new trailer for Wonder Woman 1984. Wonder Woman 1984 is still expected to come out a little bit later this year. The Batman's supposed to come out next year. And I liked the trailer for The Batman. I mean, we've gotten a lot of Batman movies recently, but I feel like this is going to take it in kind of a new direction and make it a little more serious. And I think Robert Pattinson is an interesting actor. And after seeing him in The Lighthouse, which we both didn't love, but he's in Tenet coming up and he's going to be in The Batman. So he's definitely getting in more high profile things. So I think that'll be interesting to see him in this.
I think he's going to do a good job. I actually have really high hopes for this. And Robert Pattinson is someone who's grown on me quite quickly over time. Like it just took a couple movies. And Jared, this is unrelated, but when we were talking about movies that surprised us, I forgot to tell you this week, I finally bought a copy of Peanut Butter Falcon. So now I own
nice.
It. Yeah. Cause I just thought that movie was too sweet and too like just lovely and family friendly and stuff to pass up. So I'm thrilled that I have it. I'm going to definitely watch it this week.
Great. So I think it's on Hulu still, if I'm not mistaken. So if you haven't seen it, you can check it out. I think it is.
I could have watched it this whole time. Whatever. Anyway.
Oh, well, you've owned it now.
Yeah, I watched that in the trailer for Wonder Woman, which I had already seen a trailer for that. But I will say I'm pumped for both. The Batman one looks slightly more intriguing to me only because it's like it's a brand new thing. Yeah. But you know my love for Chris Pine. I mean,
yes, of course.
And Gal Gadot. I mean, that one has Crushler written all over it.
It really does. So, and let's see, when is that supposed to come out? The new release date, which has been shifted like, you know, 4 times basically at this point. So, yeah, let me see if I can find it real quick here.
I keep getting alerts that Tenet, they're like, don't forget, Katie, go see Tenet in theaters. And I'm like, no, you'll be waiting until 2021 at the very earliest.
Yeah, Wonder Woman is supposed to come out October 2nd, so that's not that far away. I thought it was further out than that, but only about a month until that hits theater. So I think the big test, though, will be Tenet, because it's the first big thing that's going to come out. And it depends on, I guess, how well that does at the box office and how many people actually go see it. And I think that'll impact some other movies that might be scheduled to come out this year. If they release Tenet and it only makes $50 million at the box office, then I feel like a lot of these other companies are going to be like, well, we're not going to put our stuff out yet because people still aren't ready to see it. So we'll see what happens with that, which that comes out next week when we're recording this. So very soon. So that's really only news we have for today. And then we also do have a correction, one little correction that we need to address.
It was more because this bothered me last week. We talked about Zero Dark Thirty. This actually might have been Jurassic Park. No, it was Zero Dark Thirty because I just listened to that one. I quoted something from a website. I didn't realize I just pronounced it wrong and I checked with a friend. So I said, Reuters. It's Reuters.
Yeah. Yep.
And I've done that before because I've heard about that. I mean, that's like not a new news source or anything, but I just noticed I said it. And while I was listening to the episode and it bothered me and I was like, I have to check that. And then I checked it. So anyway, Reuters, my apologies. Anyway,
It is Reuters. So yes. A little inside baseball is that we have notes when we do the show, obviously, but sometimes we just read off of there and we don't really think about what we're like. We're just reading it. Yeah. We're just like reciting it. So like I didn't catch it either. So because I was just like, oh, we're just going along the notes and following the plan or whatever. So sometimes that happens from time to time. So I've definitely mispronounced things on this show as well. So with that, we'll move into our recommendations. Just a few for this week. So I only have one. It's actually not a TV show or a book or movie or anything, but Dan Patrick, the sportscaster, does a radio show. And I just happened to be listening to, he puts all the hours up as podcasts, basically, so in Apple Podcasts. But I was just listening to an hour as I was driving down to Indy the other day, and it was with Bryan Cranston, who was in that new movie that's on Disney Plus, the one and only Ivan or whatever. But they talked about the movie for about 2 minutes, and then the rest of the interview was this just them having fun with each other. So it was a very funny interview. It made me laugh multiple times. Like, they were talking, Dan Patrick was like, so who is the better actor that got COVID, you or Tom Hanks? So they like, you know, they debate that for a minute, and it's pretty funny. So if you get a chance and you want to just listen to that, it's about 20 minutes, that whole interview, but really good interview between the two of them and very funny. And like I said, he was on to promote his movie, but they didn't really focus on his movie that long. It was more on him getting coronavirus, obviously, and some other things that he's done throughout his career and stuff. So that's only my recommend though. But you do have a recommend on here that I have watched and I do enjoy. So we'll get to that one in a second.
Perfect. I know exactly what you're talking about. So I watched finally Middleditch and Schwartz on Netflix. So if you're into long form improv or just improv in general, this in particular is long form improv. But I watched it and it was hysterical. It was more like impressive to watch as someone who, like I'm interested in improv. But it was just so cool to watch people that are really, really good at it. And I loved too. I don't know if this is something that people would catch if they hadn't taken classes. Mm-hmm. I don't mean that in a pretentious way. There were times when, cause you're always supposed to choose a character. Like it's really important that no matter what you say, yes. And, but like, if you believe in the character you're playing, it's easier to keep it going longer. Mm-hmm. And there were times you could tell, especially the third one, they forgot, cause it's only 3 episodes. You could tell they were kind of losing the character. And so someone would just say like, I don't remember who you are. And it was kind of like a cue on stage to be like, remind me, let's walk through this again. And that made it even more funny. So they were incredibly talented, but I highly recommend it. It's 3 episodes. They're each about an hour and a half. And it's good. I mean, it's good background noise, but it is fun to watch. You definitely want to pay attention to the first 5 minutes though, because it sets the whole thing up when they ask an audience member to tell them an idea.
Yeah. And you mentioned the characters. That's like, they don't just play like one character the whole time. They switch. Like there'll be like 12 different characters in this, whatever they're acting out. And it's only 2 of them. So they'll play all the characters. So just from that perspective of like remembering all the names they came up with and the little personality traits for all of them and all, it's very funny. So definitely check that out if you haven't seen it.
And then I also wanted to bring up, I watched Detroit because you and I talked about that when we did Zero Dark Thirty, because Kathryn Bigelow directed Detroit. So it's on Hulu. It's still there. It's 2 hours-ish. I just know it was long. And I will say out of the 3 movies I've seen, I think I've only seen 3 of Kathryn Bigelow's. It was my least favorite. It's definitely good from a, if you are really interested in learning about race relations and inclusion and problems that have plagued the Black community, I think it's a fantastic watch. But it just wasn't as interesting to me. It was extremely depressing. But
and John Boyega's in that, correct? He's the lead character.
He didn't have like, I mean, to me, he didn't have a huge, he did have a big part, but I didn't feel like there wasn't like one person that I thought this is the lead.
He's just on the poster and like in all the trailers and stuff.
Yeah.
So
I mean, he certainly had a big role. He's one of the police officers.
Okay. Gotcha.
So I would recommend that if you're not going to be triggered by something kind of depressing right now, and obviously things are just continuing with problems in our society, especially in regards to the Black community. So if that's something that's going to trigger you, I wouldn't recommend it, but it is a good movie. I mean, and you can certainly learn something. And then I wanted to talk about, I watched Hollywood on Netflix. I don't think, Jared, you hadn't watched this.
I have not seen this, no.
So it's only 7 episodes. It's another show, again, by Ryan Murphy and Ian Brennan. That's always his writing partner. And Ryan Murphy, of course, is in charge of American Horror Story, Glee, Assassination of Gianni Versace, All of those. Mm-hmm. Fantastic, just genius writer, genius director. Hollywood is about this woman, Pat Entwistle. Peg, excuse me. The whole thing is about her. Peg Entwistle. I didn't know this, Jared. I couldn't believe someone who's obsessed with Hollywood like me didn't know this, but she jumped off the H of the Hollywood Land sign when it was still Hollywood Land.
Okay.
And completed suicide. But she was only 24, 25 years old. The thing doesn't revolve around that. It's just like an idea, and they decided to make a movie about it in Hollywood. I will say this, not family friendly. Not something, I don't think anybody like 13 and under should watch the show. It is graphic sex. And it's not throughout the whole, I mean, it is throughout the whole thing, but it's not like, it doesn't revolve around that, but enough that like, I would have been seriously uncomfortable to watch this with anybody else. But that's just me. I come from a different background. But the acting's fantastic. It was a lot of faces that you see in Ryan Murphy's shows, but also a lot of new young people that I've never seen in anything else. But highly recommend it, especially if you're like me and you love the golden age of Hollywood. You love Hollywood, the whole idea of Hollywood and making it big. Like, this is the show for you. And then lastly, shameless plug, but just want to keep encouraging people to vote, because voting is so important this year, especially since it's probably going to be primarily voting by mail. But I am a huge fan of Pod Save America, and they have, I went to their website this week, they have votesaveamerica.com now that you can go to, and it gives you fantastic information about voting early and voting by mail. It's factual, which I love. And then it also tells you for your specific state, and you can adopt a state. They have battleground states. There are six of them. I can't name them all. I know North Carolina and Arizona are two of them. But you can adopt a state. So like, you can find out ways in your home, like staying home and socially distance, how you can still help get people to vote, get the word out about certain candidates and stuff. But I think regardless of political views, it is a privilege and an honor to be able to vote. So please do so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So make sure you're registered to vote, and then obviously vote in the election coming up in November. Yes. So
November 3rd.
Yes, that is the date. So, and as I always say, if you don't vote, you can't complain about who got in office. So, because you got to vote, you got to cast your ballot. So be sure to do that coming up a little bit later this year. So with that, we'll move into our review of The Godfather, where they don't really take votes on anything. They just, whatever, Don Corleone says basically is how it goes. So it's more of a dictatorship in The Godfather, but,
definitely.
This was released on March 14th of 1972. It's rated R for graphic violence, brief nudity, sex, and language. Although it is, I would say it's not really that hard of an R rating. Maybe, I mean, by today's standards, it's not awful.
I would say only violence. Like, violence is the only thing that sticks out to me. Even the language, I'm like, I don't
language
even
is not
that,
bad. Yeah,
nudity is like
a little bit. Yeah,
but it's also
not
like
much.
It's not like a gratuitous moment.
No,
you know? And then
so
yeah.
So by today's standards, it would not be that bad for an R-rated movie.
Yeah.
But in the 70s, probably. So 2 hours and 55 minutes. You probably knew that about it already. It's a pretty lengthy movie, and of course has two sequels, The Godfather Part 2 and The Godfather Part 3. Most people say the second one is pretty good. Would say the second one is very good too. The third one, not as great. So that's most people's opinion on it. But this one, very high scores on IMDb, 9.2 out of 10. And then Rotten Tomatoes, critics 98%, audience 98%. So very few people dislike this movie, considered a classic, especially of the 70s and just of movie making in general and mob movies and all of that stuff. So definitely high up there on the list for a lot of those categories. Box office wise, $134 million domestically, $246 million worldwide. That's a lot in 1972 dollars.
Sure
so
is.
It did very well at the box office. And if you don't know, the synopsis is the aging patriarch of an organized crime dynasty transfers control of his clandestine empire to his reluctant son. So then Don Corleone is played by Marlon Brando. And then Michael Corleone, who is played by Al Pacino, is his son. I mean, there's more of his family in the movie, but that's the main one. So some critics reviews for this movie. First, we have Vincent Canby of The New York Times, who says Francis Ford Coppola has made one of the most brutal and moving chronicles of American life ever designed within the limits of popular entertainment.
That's absolutely true. Great story. Mm-hmm. That's what I want to focus on. Yeah.
Yep. We'll talk about that more too in just a little bit. And then next up we have Neil Smith of BBC.com who says, Coppola's masterpiece reveals something new every time you watch it. I think that's true too. Like on this watch, I was like, wow, I really like Robert Duvall's character. And before I hadn't really paid attention to his character very much, but in this viewing, I was like, I really like his character. So I think it is true that you pick up something different every time. The first time you watch it, you're just getting the story, getting the characters, getting the background. But then the more times you watch it and you're kind of familiar with what happens, then you can kind of pick up on some of those smaller things that maybe you didn't notice the first time through. Next up is John Hartley of film.com who says the years have been kind to this timeless mafia epic, which seems particularly rich now that studio blockbusters no longer demonstrate this kind of care with character, atmosphere, and storytelling.
I loved this quote. I think that this guy is right on the money. I think it's John Hartle. I could be wrong, but it did end with an L. I've never seen that, but
yeah,
cool.
That's kind of weird.
But I think this is very true because I think a lot of people, for whatever reason, time, budget, production, like limits or whatever, they don't spend time developing really rich characters. Mm-hmm. I think that's part of why I loved Parasite so much.
Yeah.
I felt like I understood those people, what motivated them, why they were living the way they were living, the decisions they made. Like that all made sense to me because the characters were set up. They were so well-rounded.
Yes, they definitely were. So, and I think the thing that has come out most recently that's tried to imitate this a little bit is The Irishman, which we talked about last year here on the show, which is also kind of another mobster movie. But I think most people would agree, and you and I would agree, that that is not as good as this, obviously.
Correct.
But was trying to do some of the same things, I guess. And Martin Scorsese, in terms of like these types of movies, would probably be the other director you would associate with them, along with Francis Ford Coppola. Those are probably the two big ones that do these types of mob, you know, mafia type movies. So, and finally, we have Roger Ebert of the Chicago Sun-Times, who says the story by Mario Puzo?
Puzo? I think it's Puzo.
Puzo? Mm-hmm.
Puzo.
It's Italian. So, and Francis Ford Coppola is a brilliant conjuring act, inviting us to consider the mafia entirely on its own terms. That's a good point.
Oh, yeah. And Mario comes up later in my fun facts, but Mario was he wrote the book that it's based on. And then he also wrote the screenplay with Francis Ford Coppola, and they were lifelong friends.
Nice. And this is a very insider's view of the mafia. So because there's no characters in it that are outside of their involvement with the mafia. So it's definitely an insider's perspective. So Don't Know, directed by Francis Ford Coppola, great director, of course, continuing our director series. We're going to have some fun facts about him coming up here in just a second, but he was born in 1939 in Detroit, but grew up in a New York suburb in an Italian American family. So perfectly fits to direct a movie about Italian Americans set in New York. He is best known for, of course, The Godfather Part II, The Outsiders, and Apocalypse Now. I will say Apocalypse Now, I had to watch that in college, and that's a tough movie to get just from us. That's
that
a tough
movie.
Story to get through too. Heart of Darkness, the book it's based on, is very difficult to read, and the movie is very like difficult too. So
when I watched the AFI list of the top 100 movies of all time, that was one of my least favorite movies. I did though love The Outsiders. We had to read The Outsiders in middle school. And I freaking loved that book, and I loved the movie. So I didn't know he directed that until I was researching for this. But now it makes more sense.
Nice. So he's been nominated for 14 Oscars, and he won 5 for Best Original Screenplay for Patton, Best Adapted Screenplay for The Godfather, and then Best Director, Best Picture, and Best Adapted Screenplay for The Godfather Part 2. And in 2010, he won the Irving J. Thalberg Memorial Award. He's since retired, but a great director, obviously, that has done a lot of iconic classic movies and still alive today. So he's 81. So congrats to Francis Ford Coppola because he directed a great movie here. So some fun facts about the movie. You found a couple of these on Wikipedia, IMDb.com, and then the Oscars website about some things about Francis Ford Coppola.
Yes. Thank you so much. Also, shout out to Wiki and Wikipedia, IMDb. They always give us great information. And then Oscars.org, I don't usually go to, but they were so helpful today because it is extremely hard to just type in how many Oscars has this person been nominated for? because the, I mean, this is just a pet peeve of mine. The internet will show you like all this, this list, but it doesn't just give you the answer. Like if you type in how old is Al Pacino, cause I did that today. Cause I didn't want to do math, which it's easy math too. Cause of even numbered years, I still didn't want to do it, but it's fine. But it is so hard to, it never gives you a direct answer. So that's annoying to me. It'll give you a direct answer on age, but it won't about Oscars.
Yeah.
Moving on. So these are really interesting, I thought. So Francis Ford Coppola is one of only six people in Academy Award history to receive Oscars as a producer, director, and screenwriter. So that's a pretty big deal. Similar to an EGOT. That's just like a big deal. He is lifelong friends, like I mentioned, with Mario Puzo. Mario did pass away, unfortunately. He's also lifelong friends with George Lucas. They are very close. And that comes up later. Francis Ford Coppola and his sister, Talia Shire. I already knew this, but I'm proud to say. Talia Shire, if you're like, what? They have different last names. They just did that. I think it was kind of to forge their own path. But okay. She later played Adrian in Rocky, if you're wondering why she looked familiar in this movie. And she was the bride in this movie. But Coppola and his sister, Talia Shire, became the first brother-sister team to be nominated for Oscars in the same film in The Godfather Part II in 1974.
Nice.
Also, he had polio as a child for 9 months. So he was confined to his bed. He watched television and played with puppets for entertainment. So I definitely think that had a positive impact on his life path. And glad he recovered as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then also George Lucas has said that Francis Ford Coppola was the inspiration for the character of Han Solo in Star Wars. So that will be fun to rewatch Star Wars again and know that, because I had never heard that before today.
Very nice. Also, I found one more fun fact about Francis Ford Coppola. He was the only third director to have two nominations for Best Picture in the same year, for The Godfather Part II, and I believe The Great Gatsby or The Conversation was the other one. He came out with three movies in 1974. So, but the only other directors that have done that have been Victor Fleming for Gone with the Wind and The Wizard of Oz, Alfred Hitchcock for Foreign Correspondent and Rebecca, and then Herbert Ross in 1977 with The Goodbye Girl and The Turning Point, and then Steven Soderbergh did it in 2000 with Aaron Brockovich and Traffic. So, but not a lengthy list there. When you consider how long it takes a movie to get made, it's impressive that you would have two movies that would be that you directed that would be nominated for Best Picture in the same year. So,
yeah, that's impressive.
It definitely is. So we will take a break here on the Silver Screen Podcast, and then we'll talk about some of our likes and dislikes for The Godfather and other fun facts coming up here in just a second on the Silver Screen Podcast. And we're back here on the Silver Screen Podcast talking about The Godfather, and we have some fun facts about The Godfather. We can just kind of go back and forth on these and share these. You researched them.
Delightful.
And found them on a couple of different sites, including cheatsheet.org, Reader's Digest, and then Mental Floss, which are all good sites to find fun facts about movies on. So, of course, the first fun fact, this movie was based on the book by Mario Puzo, who we have. I've not read the book. I don't know if you have. So
no, but I was going to say, I feel like every episode we're good at plugging books. So yes. Please go read it.
So check out the book by Mario. This movie is based on. And then, of course, it has a lot of nominated for a ton of Oscars.
Yes, it was nominated for 11 Oscars. And I don't quote me, but I'm pretty sure I read that Godfather Part II was also nominated for 11. It won. That could be a correction, though, so pretend I didn't say it. It did win Best Picture in 1973. Marlon Brando won the Best Actor Oscar. And Mario Puzo and Francis Ford Coppola won an Oscar for Best Adapted Screenplay.
You are correct, by the way. Godfather Part II nominated for 11 Academy Awards. So
thank you.
And it won 6 Oscars. Best Picture, Best Director, Best Supporting Actor, Best Adapted Screenplay, and lots of other stuff, too. So this film only cost $6 million to make, but made $26 million in the first 26 days of its release. $1 million a day is not bad in 1972 money. So it made a lot of money.
I loved what you said earlier about, I loved that quote. I specifically picked the one from the critic that said, you see something new every time you watch it, because after I looked up these fun facts before I watched it this time. So now I looked at it in a different light because I knew all these new things. But one of them being Peter Clemenza's favorite line, leave the gun, take the cannoli, was improvised and they kept it in there. And that's one of the best lines. And Tom Hanks even quotes it in You've Got Mail. because he talks about his character, Joe Fox, talks about the Godfather a ton. Also, Jared, I did want to tell you, I think sometime we should really consider You've Got Mail.
Okay. There we go. A nice romantic comedy about email. So
it's my absolute favorite.
So
you get a good, this is a good fact.
Yeah. Next. So the horse head scene where the horse is in the bed and it's all bloody, that was real and more terrifying in real life. So when they rehearsed it, they used a prop horse head. But then when they actually filmed it, they used a real one during the take. And the actor that's in that scene, his name is John Marley, and definitely surprised him that they had a real horse head. And I think you can see that from his reaction. And it's like, he's terrified in the movie. Yeah.
Like if you're an actor and someone puts a horse, like a real, I think I would have vomited.
Yeah. I think I would have too. So anyway. Definitely adds for a sense of realism though in that scene. And obviously the whole bit with that is that he has like a prize racehorse and then they kill it and put the horse head in the bed. So
I loved this. So Sofia Coppola is Francis Ford Coppola's daughter. She is in all three of the movies. In this one, she is the baby near the very end of the movie in the baptism scene that's crying. Okay. That is Sofia Coppola.
Next fun fact is that Warren Beatty, Dustin Hoffman, Jack Nicholson, and Robert De Niro all auditioned for the role of Michael, but Al Pacino was ultimately cast. So
indeed,
I think Pacino is a good choice for this. I could see De Niro doing it. I could see Jack Nicholson doing it. Dustin Hoffman would be kind of a weird choice.
No.
But you know,
weird.
I could see De Niro possibly filling in this role too. But I think the age that Pacino was when this movie came out makes it very, it's good because you have the older father and then the younger son, and that kind of creates an interesting dynamic. So whereas if you had gone with a slightly older actor, it probably would have been too old to be super realistic. So
so this next one is borderline insane to me, but Pacino apparently fit the archetypal method actor theme and had his jaw wired shut for the first part of the shoot after his character was punched in the face. Now that I knew this time going into it, I could tell his jaw was wired shut. Like you could, I mean, he's a great actor, but like you could definitely see that was happening. I don't mean that as a dig either. I just think it's insane that he went that far just to make it seem realistic.
Yeah. So, and then the last fun fact that we have is that Marlon Brando was not the first choice for Don Vito Corleone. Paramount Studios agreed to pursue him under three conditions. One, he had to do a screen test. And then two, if he was cast, he would have to do the movie for free. And three, if he would have to personally put up a bond to make up for potential losses caused by his infamously bad on-set behavior. If you don't know that about Marlon Brando, definitely has a bad reputation for being not a great actor on set. Puts in good performances, but kind of a pain to work with from what numerous directors and other actors have said. So Francis Ford Coppola lured him into what he called a makeup test, which in reality was the screen test that the studio wanted. And then when Coppola showed the Paramount that test, they liked it so much, they said, okay, we'll drop the second and third stipulations. And they agreed to let Marlon Brando be in the movie.
Isn't that crazy? I felt super bad because I'm not a Brando fan. I mean, this is no secret, but because I really have a hard time. I mean, I shouldn't pass judgment. I don't know any of these people in real life, but I feel like if you hear it enough, it's like more likely to be true. And I have just heard over and over about the stuff that he did when he was alive, like both on and off screen. But I felt really bad earlier. I was like, should I say that? Because I mean, I respect his acting ability, but not at all as a person. But then I also thought that's the benefit of having your own podcast. You can say what you want.
For sure. And when he was in this movie, it was kind of like a downtime for his career. Mm-hmm. Like he hadn't been in a movie that was successful in quite a while until this came along. So that would be like taking an actor that hasn't been in something for, you know, like a current day actor. I can't think of one that hasn't been something for like 10, 12 years and putting them in this. And then, you know, their career kind of revitalizes again. So, but it makes sense. I mean, if you're going to get somebody to be in a film, you know, about Italians and about, you know, New York, then Marlon Brando is definitely a good fit for that role.
Joe Pesci. Joe Pesci left and then he came out to do The Irishman.
Yeah.
Also, this is the movie where Brando, I'm sorry, I'm rolling my eyes so much. He famously won the Oscar, and this is the year that he had a Native American woman accept it for him, and he wouldn't go to the ceremony. Have you heard about this?
Yes, I have, yeah.
I mean, yep. I absolutely believe that we should stick up for Native Americans and that that story needs to be told, and it's not told enough, and they are treated unfairly and always have been. However, do I think that was the appropriate time and the appropriate way to deliver that message? Probably not.
Yeah. So with that, we'll just go ahead and move into the cast here, starting with Marlon Brando, who we're kind of already talking about. But he's been in a lot of things, obviously, throughout his career. Had a notorious reputation. We already mentioned that. Plays Don Corleone in the movie. And then he's best known for The Godfather, Apocalypse Now, Last Tango in Paris, and On the Waterfront. Nominated for 8 Oscars, 1 for The Godfather and for the movie On the Waterfront, and died at the age of 80 in 2004. So
yes,
been dead about 15 years at this point, a little longer. So that's Marlon, though. Next up is Al Pacino.
I knew not to look up his upcoming projects, too, by the way. Al Pacino plays Michael Corleone. He was born in 1940 in New York City. Pacino is a highly regarded actor. He has over 61 acting credits, but the things you would probably know him for would be Serpico, Scarface, Dog Day Afternoon, Dick Tracy, and The Godfather Parts 1 and 2. He's been nominated for 9 acting Oscars, but he's only won one time. He won Best Actor for Scent of a Woman in 1993, which is a fantastic movie.
I've not seen that.
Also, it's so, so good. It's with Chris O'Donnell. He was nominated in 2 categories that year, both for Best Actor and Supporting Actor, for Scent of a Woman, and this is the hardest title for me, Glengarry Glen Ross. I always mess it up. I got it that time. And next up, I think my dad will love this. He is going to play King Lear in a movie by the same name, and then he is currently 80 years old.
Yeah, the fact that he's still doing movies is a little outrageous. Also, regarded at this point in his career that movies that he's in, besides The Irishman, are not like insanely good. So
that's true. Like, I do feel like they've declined. And speaking of people, though, who have a lot going on for their age, James Caan is a little even more impressive as far as upcoming projects. So James Caan plays Sonny Corleone. Caan was born in 1940 as well in the Bronx. So they all have a very similar history, these actors. He's best known for Misery, The Godfather, Thief, and Dogville. He was nominated for a Best Supporting Actor Oscar for his role in The Godfather. So this one, the first one. He's been married 4 times, no judgment. But you would recognize his son, Scott Caan. I felt I had to mention that. He is currently on the TV show Hawaii Five-0. So if you think he looked familiar, that could be why. They look identical, except one is a lot older. And then he has 3 upcoming projects, including Redemption, Never Too Late, and Acre Beyond the Rye. And the only reason James Caan did not do as much with his career is because I read that he had quite a few flops. Like, he would try a movie and went for it. He always had work, but he just had a bunch of misses, unfortunately. Okay.
Yeah, that happens sometimes with actors, unfortunately, is that you try to pick good projects and then you just get kind of on a bad streak where you're just not in a lot of great stuff and it just hurts your career. Really no fault. I mean,
definitely
not a huge fault of your own. It's just the consequences of the movies coming out and audiences not loving them. So even if you read the script and you're like, this should be good and it's got good actors in it or whatever. So
yeah. And this had a stellar supporting cast. So just to mention them, my favorite, Diane Keaton, was in this when she was super young and she would look darling. Robert Duvall, Talia Shire, Abe Vigoda, Alex Rocco, and Sterling Hayden, among others. There were many, many good actors in this film.
So with that, we'll move on to our likes and dislikes for The Godfather. And first up, one of my big likes is that I really like how the story starts and how it gets set up where they're at the wedding. They're at Don Corleone's daughter's wedding. And, you know, people are coming in to see him as the wedding is going on. But Coppola kind of cuts back and forth between the wedding and between what's happening in his office and the meetings that are taking place there. So really gives you a good introduction to the character and, you know, how much he values family and how much he values, you know, if you do this for me, I'll do that for you. Kind of like, you know, even playing field type deal, but really sets it up well kind of in with the wedding going on in the background. And that's probably like the first 30 minutes of the movie is that just that happening, because then Michael eventually comes and what's the singer's name? I forget the guy that comes to see him.
Oh my gosh. Johnny, Johnny Fontaine.
I think that's right. So he comes and he talks to him for a few minutes, and you know, Sonny's in there obviously, and Robert Duvall's character, and they're all, you know, hanging out. But I think it's a good start to a movie to kind of get you set in the world and the characters and the family.
Yeah, and that's a really great point, Jared, because my thing that goes along with that is I just think the movie is engaging for pretty much the entire 3 hours. And there are so many iconic scenes from this film, like even the horse head. I mean, I'd already seen this movie quite a few times, but that's one thing that pretty much everybody knows is in this movie. And it's within like the first 20 or 30 minutes. Like you just don't think it's going to, I think it is. It might be a little bit more in, but it happens pretty close to the beginning. And I would have thought that would have been like a penultimate scene or something. And it wasn't. That's like close to the beginning. But there's so many things that keep you interested. And I also love that they start with that wedding scene because it really introduced you to the characters and the family and what was like, you know, the big momentous occasion going on in their lives at the time that year.
Mm-hmm. Well, even like he goes down there to like take the big family photo. And he's like, where's Michael? And he's like, we're not doing this till Michael is here. So like that kind of gives you the impression early on that like, yes, it is all about family and every member of the family is important. And then when Michael brings his then girlfriend into the photo, you can tell that that's like not looked great upon by the other members of the family because she's not technically a member of the family yet. So just like those are small things that you realize kind of with multiple viewings that you pick up on. So and Robert Duvall's character is Tom Hagen. I couldn't remember his name, but that's his character's name in the movie. So,
and he's kind of adopted by the family. He became a brother.
Yeah he kind of handles like business matters for the family and does a lot of the heavy lifting actually of the Corleone family. So another thing that's really good about this movie is the music. Obviously very iconic, but the musical score is very good and sets the tone for a lot of the movie.
Yes, the horse head scene again. It's not my favorite scene. I just love coming back to it. I love especially that one, how the music builds when you see the stairs and you see that beautiful mansion that man lives in. And it gets a little creepier and a little creepier. Mm-hmm. And then he wakes up, you think everything's fine. And then there's blood. And then he's like, oh, no. But the music, I won't sing it like I did in Jurassic Park. But the score is fantastic. And yeah, that music, I just think that music is something that people, it's like Wizard of Oz, where you can kind of identify, you know, that movie belongs to The Godfather, even if you've never seen The Godfather.
And the DVD I have of this movie is a little older. So like on the DVD menu, it plays the music in the background, but it's only like 30 seconds of the score. So I had finished the movie this afternoon and I had it on while I was making dinner. And then it just went back to the menu and I was like, okay, that's enough of this.
When you
know, that same 30 seconds is getting a little annoying. So you mentioned the horse head scene, but there's a lot of other scenes in this movie that are iconic. Of course, the car blowing up. The kind of assassinations that are happening while the baptism is going on simultaneously.
I would say the wedding is totally famous.
Yeah. You know, Michael visiting Dawn in the hospital and that whole situation kind of playing out. So there's like you said, there's a lot of different scenes in this movie that it is well known for, and a lot of different set pieces that happen over the course of the 3 hours of the film. And that's one of our likes too, is that it is a long movie, but it is very engaging for the whole time that it's that's on screen. Minus just a few little parts, which I'll talk about in my dislike section, because I have a few little parts that I think you could cut, but not very much.
Yeah, this to me, again, I know that Gone with the Wind is under fire and probably should be. Gone with the Wind, though, I would say this and Gone with the Wind are two of the longest movies I've seen. I'm sure there's a couple more, but where I really, to me personally, I wouldn't cut anything out. Like, I just think all of it's good, all of it's engaging and aids the story. But I think it's so rare that people get it right.
It really is. So, and then the story, we've already talked about the story a lot, but the story is very engaging, and it's, you know, interesting to watch a movie about the mafia and the mob where they really never talk about that very much. They talk about the families, like the five families, and they have a meeting with the five families. And that's really interesting from like a mob perspective, because you think that like, oh, this gang doesn't talk to this gang because they're both in competition, but they all have that like, and I think that's one of the better scenes of the movie where they all have that meeting and they're talking about, should we get into selling drugs? Well, I don't know. You know, the cops, they've helped us out with the gambling and, you know, the alcohol and stuff like that. But drugs are going to be a whole different. So it's like they have that they're mobsters, they're gangsters, but they have some moral dilemmas too, which is interesting.
Yeah. And that was a fun fact I didn't include, but I did read on Mental Floss or somewhere that this is a movie about the mob where they never say the word mafia or mob. Like, that's intentional that they never say it, but you know what's going on. Mm-hmm. I love what you said. I didn't think of it that way, but it's an insider's view. I think that's what makes it so interesting is that there are so many times in the film too, where Kay is who Diane Keaton plays, where she doesn't really object to what's going on. But I'm like, why are you still there? I know he's a great guy. He's attractive. I get it. But why are you sticking around? He is murdering people. He is, you know, I mean, he's having his brother-in-law killed, out in the open. I personally wouldn't stick around, but I'm also not her and this isn't happening to me. But just saying,
that's even
it's an insider's view.
A thing that happens early in the movie when they're at the wedding, they're sitting down at that table and Michael's talking to her about, like, she's like, what happened to this guy? And he's like, well, some things happened and somebody had to take care of it. And then she wants more details. And he's like, well, we killed him. So that's what happened. So, you know, even from that perspective of like, yeah, this seems like kind of a crime ridden family with a lot of, you know, backstory and a lot of paths that you probably don't want to cross. You know, you're getting involved in this. Is that really worth it for this guy? So, but also final would be that this kind of plays out over the course of The Godfather and The Godfather Part Two, but the overarching story is really interesting of how Michael initially doesn't really want anything to do with the family, kind of distances himself from the mob and what they're doing and kind of is doing his own thing. And then obviously by the end of the movie is in charge kind of the family. And in the second movie, you see that play out way more and that his attitude has definitely changed a lot. So like that character progression is very good throughout the course of the two films.
Yes, I completely agree with you. I also, this is so random, but I remembered another scene that is pivotal in this film that we didn't mention was, I feel like everybody talks about the scene where Marlon Brando's in the garden with the grandson.
Yeah.
Which, spoiler alert, he dies.
He dies.
I think we all know that. But I always forget. It's like every time I watch this movie, he gets shot. And I think, oh my God, he dies. And then I forget that scene at the end, like he comes back, he's fine, he's in rehab, he's okay.
Just has a heart attack.
And then has a heart attack and dies while his grandson sprays him. I wondered if that was pesticide. I was like, is he spraying pesticide on his grandfather who's dying? Or is that just like water?
Yeah, that's kind of an odd scene because it happens just
it's
all of a sudden.
So weird.
And there's no music. And he just like Marlon Brando's impersonation of someone dying is honestly not that great in that particular scene.
It's not a lesson in acting.
No, he's very good throughout the rest of the movie. But that scene, you're like, this is a little cheesy. Yeah. So, yeah, that scene, too, where he's just in the garden and he passes away. So lots of iconic scenes. Are you ready to move on to dislikes now?
Indeed, yes.
Okay, so really my one few dislikes, I don't have very many dislikes of this movie, but I would say that I don't love the whole subplot of Michael's marriage and like how they take that 30 minutes for like him to get married and they're speaking in Italian a lot, so there's just a lot of subtitles or they just don't put up there what they're saying. And then obviously, like, spoiler alert, she dies in a car that gets blown up. So I just felt like for the story and for moving it along, like that 20 minutes or so of that particular part, I feel like you could cut down that a little bit. That would be the only thing I would probably cut down, but that would probably be the only thing that I just didn't feel like had a huge impact on the story as a whole. But one of your dislikes is that there's not really a good portrayal of women in this movie.
Yeah.
And one could argue that that's kind of one of the parts where a woman is actually focused on for a few minutes.
Well, and I think I would argue that Coppola put that in there so you become sympathetic to that character. Because when she dies, it's really sad. Mm-hmm. Except the whole time, I want him to marry Kay. I want him to marry Diane Keaton. So it's not like I'm rooting for that other poor woman to die.
Yeah.
But I get what you're saying. Yeah, my argument is more like you don't... There's no women standing up for themselves in any capacity. Like, I don't expect them to be feminists that are like burning their bras and fighting in the streets. But I am surprised that none of these women are like, I'm done with you. I won't put up with this behavior, or you need to be better to our children. You need to help cook. Like, there's none of that. They just take it.
No.
So that's hard for me to watch just as a viewer, because I'm like, wow, I don't admire. Well, that's another criticism of mine, is that in general, I don't admire anyone in this film. There's not a single person that I'm like, you know, you're rooting, like, I'm rooting for you. I would say that Duvall's character is the closest I get to caring about someone in this film. But he's helping hide all the stuff and he's coordinating all these murders and stuff. So I don't know that I admire him, but he's probably the only person that I feel like just a touch of concern and sympathy for.
Well, and you mentioned like there's no real female characters that are focused on in this movie. And I think of like another mobster movie like Goodfellas, which does have some like strong female yes. characters in it. And one thing that I think is interesting in that movie is like the female characters will talk to one another about what the male characters are, what, you know, mob members are doing and kind of yeah. how that life is as a mob life, if you will. So this movie doesn't really have any of that, which I think could be interesting if you were to add in just a scene or two of, you know, one of them calling another one on the phone and talking about what's going on, or, you know, the situation happening or something, like sharing their concerns and their feelings too. So
yes,
another dislike for this movie is that all the problems in this movie are solved with violence, which obviously it's going to be the case yep. for a mobster movie most of the time, but nothing is really talked out except for a few little scenes, but most things are handled by putting a bullet in somebody's head, and that's normally how we take care of or, you know, strangling them or choking them, or that's how most situations are resolved in this movie.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I get that violence and the mob, it kind of goes hand in hand, but, and I love this movie and I will always love this movie, but it is difficult if I probably wouldn't want a 10-year-old to see this film, because I don't like that they're like, solve all your problems with violence.
Yeah.
And also that you can just get your way no matter what. And this is how you can treat women and you don't have to be faithful and all that. So I don't think it teaches great lessons. So yeah, a dislike of mine is just that violence, they would argue that violence is a way to solve problems.
I would say too, for like a good age to watch this movie is probably like when you're 16, 17, maybe somewhere around then. But even then you could have trouble understanding it, because the plot is kind of difficult yeah. to follow with all the different family members and the other five families that are involved in, you know, this kind of larger gang, this larger crime ring, if you will. So just following yeah. all that can get difficult from time to time. So definitely got to pay attention to this movie to kind of know what goes on. And obviously watch this one before you watch The Godfather Part 2 or Part 3.
Because
you have, it's not like a sequel that you can just pick up and start. You're like, oh, I'll just start with the second one. Nope, you'll be totally lost. You'll have no idea what's going on. So
yeah. And some people argue Godfather Part 2 is better than Godfather mm-hmm. Part 1.
Yeah, which is yeah. very rare for sequels where you would say right. the second
is
one is possibly
though.
Better than the first one. Yeah, it is
yeah,
very good.
I think
good.
I'm going to watch that this week too, because I was like, oh, now I really want to rewatch the second one.
So we'll go ahead and give our scores now for The Godfather. I think you went first last time. So
I think so.
I am going to give The Godfather a 92 out of 100. So
hey, that's good.
Pretty good. Not in my top 10. I do really enjoy it. I just think because it's so long, it's a movie that I don't rewatch very often. And it's not a movie with a lot of like action set pieces or jokes or things like that. It is very much a drama. So I just think from a rewatchability standpoint, I don't rewatch it a ton, but obviously a very well-made mm-hmm. movie. We talked about the stories. We talked about the characters and how those are really well done. So 92 out of 100 for my grade.
Excellent. Mine's not far off. Mine is higher.
Okay.
This is definitely one of my favorite like classic movies. I gave this a 96. I think this is incredibly rewatchable, but I love a good drama.
Mm-hmm.
I really respect any character-driven, well-developed character-driven films. So this is definitely one that I could watch over and over. I really like the characters. The story is engaging to me the whole time. I don't think I would shorten it, or it would be hard for me to shorten it.
Yeah.
So definitely a great one for me. So 96.
Nice. So those are our scores for The Godfather. And you can find the Silver Screen Podcast on Facebook at just search the Silver Screen Podcast. And then on Twitter and Instagram, just search Podcast Silver. That's our handle for both of those platforms. You can find us there and follow us on social media. Like, comment, tell us what you might want us to have us review in the next couple of months. That's always helpful too. And then also wherever you listen to the show, be sure to rate and review. Leave us a star rating, write a little review. That always helps us out. And the next little series we're going to do here on the Silver Screen Podcast is movies we've never seen. And one of those yeah. movies is Cats from 2019. It came out when the movie theaters were normal, when things were normal, we had a lot of other, it came out around Christmas. So we had like Star Wars and we had a lot of other movies that we had to cover in that short amount of time. So
yes.
Cats did not get reviewed because of just how bad the reviews were for Cats. But now I'm kind of interested to watch it and just see how bad it is and, yeah. you know, write down all my questions and why things happened the way they did. So I think it will be a fun watch. Very like lighthearted, funny watch of Cats. So that'll be
I
the
do
next.
Too. I think.
Yeah.
I think it'll be entertaining for sure. I have a strong, I would say a 98% possible chance that you and I will both dislike it intensely. But I think it'll be a fun episode to talk about too, because I think it's rare that you and I watch a movie that we just don't like. Mm-hmm. So it'll be good. It'll
and
be like Monuments Men all over again.
Maybe I'll love it, but I don't think I'm going to love it.
Yeah, maybe it'll be great. Maybe I'll be outraged that people hated it.
Yeah. So we're going to do movies we've never seen for a couple weeks, and then we're going to do movies that scare us because Halloween will be coming up at the end of October. So the month of October is going to be kind of more scary, spooky movies. So
yes.
Those are the next couple things coming up here on the Silver Screen Podcast. And on our next episode, we'll be reviewing Cats.
Until next time, we'd like to thank the Academy.